Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining for the announcement of NOAA's Spring Outlook and Flood Risk for 2021. This media briefing is being recorded. If you would not like to be recorded, please disconnect at this time. My name is Jasmine Blackwell, and I'm the media contact for the Spring Outlook. At the conclusion of this media briefing, you can reach me by email at jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov. That's jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov, or by phone at 202-841-9184. You can find the news release and maps related to today's announcement on noaa.gov, and I would like to bring your attention to the chat box to the right of your screen, where you can find a direct link to the news release. The beginning of today's media briefing will consist of about 15 minutes of remarks from our experts, and then we will take questions from reporters. If you would like to ask a question during the question and answer portion of this briefing, please click the hand icon in the GoToWebinar window next to your name in the attendees list that appears to the right of your screen. My colleague Lauren Gacious will then call upon each reporter that has virtually raised his or her hand, and your line will then be unmuted. Please be sure to state your full name and your media affiliation when asking your question. The NOAA experts with me today to speak about the spring outlook are Mary Erickson, Deputy Director of the National Weather Service, John Gottschalk, Chief of the Operational Branch at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, Ed Clark, Director of the National Water Center in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and we are also joined by Dr. Don Klein, Associate Director of Water Resources with the U.S. Geological Survey. And with that, I will turn it over to Mary Erickson.
Thank you, Jasmine. I'd like to echo Jasmine's warm welcome to our reporters joining us for the announcement of NOAA's 2021 Spring Outlook and Flash and Flood Risk. We are very glad that you could join to hear this important message. Each of you is vital to ensuring our forecasts for seasonal weather and water events reach all members of local communities that may be at risk of flooding or other hazardous weather this spring. Our scientists at NOAA produce the Spring Outlook to help people and businesses in the United States prepare for potential impacts on their lives and livelihoods. This is key to building a more weather-ready nation for all. One that is ready, responsive, and resilient to extreme weather, water, and climate events. The U.S. Spring Outlook includes three components: flood risk, predictions for temperature and precipitation, and an outlook for drought from April through June. We assess where the water will be and whether we'll have too much or too little. For the first time in 3 years, we are not predicting major flooding, which is good news for many, but the message is not entirely positive. Water levels in the West are low, and we are predicting prolonged and widespread drought. The Southwest is already experiencing widespread severe to exceptional drought and will remain the hardest hit region in the United States this spring. In the Southwest and other drought affected areas, water supply will continue to be a concern. John Gottschalk will discuss the drought outlook along with the temperature and precipitation outlook momentarily. But before he does, I'd like to say a few words about preparedness. In recent years, much of the nation has experienced widespread historic flooding. In fact, just last year, more than 128 million people were at risk for flooding in their communities. This year, it is a different story. NOAA hydrologists do not predict major river flooding for the first time since 2018. And although the overall threat this spring does not include major flooding, moderate to minor flooding is likely in limited areas. So we must remain diligent about our risk. And remember, significant spring rainfall can cause localized flash floods at any time. People underestimate the force and power of water. Many flood-related deaths occur due to an individual walking or driving into or near floodwaters. This is preventable. It's never safe to drive or walk into floodwaters. Please help everyone remember our key message: turn around, don't drown. Folks can stay up to date with the latest local forecast, and we hope they will not let their guard down because heavy rainfall can still lead to devastating flooding events, even in areas where the overall risk is forecast to be low or have not been impacted by flooding before. In talking about preparedness, flood insurance can be the difference between recovery and financial devastation. We encourage folks to visit FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program website at www.floodsmart.gov to learn more about how you can protect yourself and your family this spring. As always, our scientists at NOAA's 13 river forecast centers and our 122 local weather forecast offices are continuing to support their local decision makers and efforts to ensure community readiness for potential flood impacts. This year marks 10 years of our Weather Service vision to build a more weather-ready nation. And we acknowledge that we cannot meet this vision for a weather-ready nation alone. Teamwork and partnerships have been and will continue to be absolutely essential to our success. Through our Weather Ready Nation Ambassador Program, we now have a diverse array of more than 11,380 organizations who, in addition to our partners in the emergency management community and the Weather Water Climate Enterprise, act as force multipliers to become societal change agents to help us achieve these successes in community readiness. We look forward to continuing to leverage these partnerships with communities and organizations across the nation. We're focused on ensuring that our products and services are accessible to all Americans, including those underrepresented and most vulnerable, realizing our vision of a more ready nation for all. Before handing it over to John, I would like to take the time to thank our federal partners for joining us today. We'll get a streamflow update from Dr. Don Klein of the Department of Interior's U.S. Geological Survey, and Brad Rippey from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Karen Gleason from the NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information are also with us today to lend their expertise during the question and answer portion of this call. Thanks to all of you. With that, I will turn it over to John at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will discuss the drought, temperature, and precipitation outlook. John?
Thanks, Mary. Nearly one half of the country extending from the Pacific coast to the Great Plains and upper Midwest is currently experiencing moderate to exceptional drought. The region that has been hardest hit by what represents the most significant drought since 2013 is the Southwest US. In this region, the failed monsoon during the summer of 2020 and the development of La Nina in the equatorial Pacific Ocean and its associated below normal precipitation this past winter have resulted in the widespread ongoing moderate to exceptional drought conditions that we are seeing in the Southwest. We expect drought conditions to persist and grow in coverage over the next 3 months, with expansion of drought conditions primarily favored for much of the high plains, as well as the southern two-thirds of the Florida Peninsula. And many of the drought-impacted areas listed above, rangeland and pastures winter wheat have already experienced adverse effects, all of which were exacerbated by the February Arctic air outbreak. Much of the Northern Plains and Upper Mississippi Valley observed substantial snowfall deficits this past winter and makes the Northern Plains in particular susceptible to further drought intensification due to favored above normal temperatures. Drought improvement or removal is likely for small regions of drought across the eastern half of the contiguous U.S. and a small region in the Pacific Northwest, where the latter improvement is primarily related to anticipated snowmelt over the next 3 months. Despite the recent heavy snowfall from the snowstorm from the Front Range of the Rockies eastward to the north central Great Plains, favored above normal temperatures and in some areas below normal precipitation over the spring as a whole maintains the risk for drought development also in this region. For seasonal mean temperatures, warmer than normal conditions are favored for nearly the entire contiguous United States. Above normal temperatures this spring in combination with low soil moisture are likely to contribute to worsening or further drought development in the central and southern Great Plains. Hawaii and western and northern areas of Alaska are most likely to observe above normal temperatures during the April through June period. Only the far Pacific Northwest, Alaska Panhandle, and Southeast Alaska are favored to observe below normal temperatures for the April through June period. Looking at the precipitation outlook, above normal precipitation is favored for parts of the Great Lakes, the Ohio Valley, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast, while our region from the Central Pacific coast across the Rockies to the Southern Plains are most likely to experience below normal precipitation during the April through June period. That concludes my remarks, and with that, I will turn it over to Ed, who will speak about the spring flood risk.
Thank you, John. I'll reiterate the takeaway that we are not predicting major flooding. However, water levels in the West are low, and we are predicting prolonged and widespread drought. NOAA categorizes flood risk as minor, moderate, major, or record flooding. See the news release for definitions of these categories, but in brief, minor flooding means minimal or no property damage, but roads may be inundated. Moderate flooding means some inundation of structures and roads near streams. Major flooding means extensive inundation of structures and roads. And record flooding is when flooding meets or exceeds historical levels. Approximately 82 million people are at risk for flooding in their communities, with nearly 9 million at risk for moderate flooding. However, overall, a reduced risk of spring flooding exists this year, attributed mainly to a dry fall and winter, along with limited snow still remaining on the ground. Major flooding is not expected this spring season. Please be advised that this outlook is on the timescale of weeks to months, not days or hours, and localized flooding may be caused by heavy, intense rainfall at any time. The lower Missouri River Basin is currently experiencing ongoing and forecast minor to moderate flooding, and as with typical years, the risk of minor to moderate flooding is predicted to continue through the spring over the lower third of the Missouri River Basin. Over the coastal plain of the Carolinas, an elevated risk of widespread minor to moderate flooding exists, driven by above normal precipitation over the winter months, which has led to highly saturated soil conditions and much above normal stream flows. The basins with moderate flooding risk are the Neuse and the lower Cape Fear River basins in North Carolina, the lower PD River Basin in the Carolinas, and the lower Santee and Edisto River Basin in South Carolina. Additionally, an above normal flood risk with minor to isolated moderate flooding is predicted, particularly in the early spring months, over the lower Ohio River Basin due to a wet winter leading to ongoing flooding and saturated near surface soils. For much of the western United States, it is too early to assess spring flooding due to continued snowfall in the higher elevations. Heavy rainfall from thunderstorms or rapid warming could increase this risk. However, the risk is high for flooding and debris flow in areas with burn scars from recent wildfires. Additional river basins with a risk of spring flooding are identified in our hydrologic assessment, which is linked in the news release on NOAA.gov. Our hydrologic assessment also provides information about the nation's water supply forecast for agriculture, municipalities, and industrial uses. Water supply predictions are generally below to much below normal across much of the southwestern United States, southern Oregon, and Idaho, and across the Rocky Mountains due to below to much below normal snowpack combined with ongoing widespread drought. Finally, our assessment also provides a first look at some of the major drivers influencing summer hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico and the Chesapeake Bay. The predicted reduced spring flood risk across the majority of the Mississippi River Basin is anticipated to result in a near normal springtime discharge of nutrients and fresh water from the basin, which create conditions for an average hypoxic zone in the northern Gulf of Mexico this summer. In the Chesapeake Bay, we also expect an average hypoxic zone based on the predicted near normal spring flood risk. These conditions are based on the assumption of typical summer conditions, such as tropical storms or drought. Heavy rainfall at any time can lead to flooding, even in areas where the overall risk is considered low. Rainfall intensity and location can only be accurately forecast days in the future. Therefore, flood risk can change rapidly. The public can determine whether their community is in a flood risk area by monitoring local flood conditions at water.weather.gov. This concludes the hydrologic outlook portion, and now I'll invite my colleague, Don Klein of the U.S. Geological Survey, to provide updates on our nation's current river conditions. Don, over to you.
Thank you, Ed. I'll take just a few minutes and confine my remarks to describing this map and explaining what you're seeing here. This is the National Water Dashboard that shows current conditions at stream gauges across the country, about 7,500 gauges. This map was pulled yesterday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, but the data are live if you were to go into the dashboard yourself. The short tour of the color coding here is the circles that are green are stream gauges that are in normal conditions for this time of year, and that's about 42% of the gauges across the country. Gauges that are orange or red are below normal. 25% of the gauges fall into that category. And you can see the western drought that was just discussed. You can also see that southern Michigan, northern Indiana, Ohio, the Cumberland Plateau, and a few other areas are fairly well below normal for right now in March. And then colors that are light or dark blue or black are above normal. And you can see the concentration there is really in the eastern portions of Nebraska, Kansas, and most of Missouri at this time. And that represents current high water as a result of recent precipitation. As Ed described, that although major flooding is not forecast for the next coming weeks and months, it's highly probable and likely that in any given heavy rain event, we will see these kinds of high water signals in our stream gauges locally. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks and turn it over to Jasmine.
Thank you, Don. Before we move on to the Q&A portion of our media briefing, I would just like to remind you of the instructions that were given at the top of the call. If you would like to ask a question, please click the hand icon in the GoToWebinar window next to your name in the attendees list that appears to the right of your screen. My colleague, Lauren Gacious, will then call upon each reporter that has a virtually raised hand. Once you are called upon, your line will be unmuted. Please be sure to state your full name and media affiliation when asking your question. And with that, I will turn it over to Lauren, who will be moderating questions and answers.
Thanks so much, Jasmine. Again, reporters, please use the raise hand icon available to you in the attendee window next to your name. Our first question I see here comes from Seth Borenstein. Seth, give me just a quick moment and I will open your line.
Good.
Thank you. Actually, it's two questions, one from Mary and then one for one of your many drought experts, maybe David or John. In terms of, you know, you're talking about how there's very little, you know, no major flooding, but all this worsening drought. When you weigh it in terms of damage to the economy, damage to crops, damage overall, given the spring outlook, is that make it the worst? Is the worsening drought more damaging than the lessening flood, or because flood is so damaging, as you say, this is in the end a net positive for the U.S.? In other words, trying to weigh the two risks, one that's gone down, one that's gone up, which is made, you know, in the end, where's the net? Net positive or net negative? And then in terms of historical, can you weigh how bad the drought outlook is for this time period,
turn my camera off,
mid-March compared to previous years? Thank you.
I think that Jasmine, David missed it to assess the historical ranking or this particular drought in the West. Are you able to do that, Dave, for us?
Hey, John. Dave Minskus from Climate Prediction Center. As far as the drought goes and our outlook here, we still have some time for the agricultural to provide a timely rainfall because most of the crops have not been planted yet. And if you do get the rainfall, because it's coming in a wet time of the season, the spring and late spring and early summer is a wet season for the most of the central part of the country. And we're only into early March right now. Although we are predicting below normal precipitation, above normal temperatures, if the rains are timely enough, we still could be okay as far as the actual output of the agriculture and the pastures and ranges go. So that's still an unknown right now. as far as the hydrological aspect goes, I'd probably defer to Ed Clark or someone else. Hopefully that answers your question, Seth.
Actually, I'm just trying to figure this dense, in other words, the net is, which is worse? And then in terms of just, what I was looking for you more was the context of how, where does this weigh upon in like the last 20 or 30 years? This is one of the worst or medium.
I want to defer to Brad Rippey as far as actual agriculture impacts go. Maybe Brad can give you a better statistic. Brad?
Seth, this is Brad Rippey. Right now, we see the majority of the drought focused across the western half of the country, and that does include key winter wheat production areas, as well as a lot of pastures and rangeland from the plains westward. Those have already been impacted to some degree by the current drought, and we do expect to see those impacts continue as drought is expected to continue. For the heart of the corn and soybean production areas, it is too early, as Dave mentioned, to really be terribly concerned about the drought impacts. I did look at the numbers from the drought monitor this morning. We have roughly about 1/5 of the U.S. corn and soybean production areas currently experiencing drought, and that's mostly in the western production areas. In terms of spring wheat, that would be a bigger concern. Most of the spring wheat's grown across the northern plains. 78% of the spring wheat production area is currently experiencing drought. That area last had a significant drought in 2017. So we do have concerns in some of our western production areas, particularly the high plains. So drought could be a big factor as we move into the early part of the growing season for some row crops.
This is Lauren. I believe Seth, that hopefully addresses your question. So thank you so much. I think we have our next question from, let's see here, looks like Brian Sullivan. Brian, your line should be open.
All right, awesome. Thanks everyone for doing this. I'm kind of focused on the crop situation in California as well as, you covered the winter wheat and spring wheat in the Midwest, but for California, almonds take a lot of water, a lot of vegetables out there. Any kind of prognosis as to what we can expect on those lands?
Yeah, this is Brad Rippey again. Currently looking at the snowpack in the Sierra Nevada, based on information provided by the California Department of Water Resources, looks like we're going to end up with about a 60% of average snowpack. That might tick up a little bit over the next couple of weeks, but we're effectively to the end of the accumulation season. A lot of the water that goes into agriculture comes from the Sierra Nevada watersheds. And so there are going to be some important local and regional decisions on how that water is allocated for agriculture and other purposes. That's a question too much detail to really get into and address here. But I think suffice to say, there will be some water cutbacks, some allocation cutbacks in California and perhaps elsewhere in the southwestern quadrant of the country this spring. So there could be some impacts on these high water demand crops, like your nut crops and other things that require a lot of water. But again, that's more of a local and regional question and probably too much to address in this national forum here.
What do you folks see for the Colorado River?
For Colorado River, Ed, can you direct us to the right RFC for that question?
Yes, let's direct that to Paul Miller at the Colorado Basin River Forecast Center.
Hey, everybody. So the Colorado River Basin, we've had pretty dry winter snowpack accumulation. It's everything is forecasted to be well below normal. Our water supply forecasts are also all forecasted to be below normal at this point. So there's no real flood risk. But most of our concern is with the inflow into the reservoirs. And that's what our stakeholders are mostly concerned about this year. We've just had such a long, persistent drought period that many of our reservoirs, especially the large ones like Lake Mead and Lake Powell, are at very low levels. And I'd probably defer to our colleagues at Reclamation to get into the policy impacts of that. But yes, just generally dry conditions throughout the Colorado River Basin. But happy to talk in more detail about any of that.
Let's handle that.
Thanks, Brian.
No, that's great. Thank you. I was just trying to get a overview of the Colorado and the reservoirs. So he answered the question perfectly. Thank you.
Super. It looks like our next question comes from Davis Nolan. Davis, your line should be open. Please let us know your outlet as well.
Yes, I'm from WKRN TV in Nashville, Tennessee. Two simple questions. I'll be doing a story on our evening news about this, the outlook, of course. In the beginning, you sort of gave, I don't want to call it a disclaimer, but I was already featuring in my mind, okay, this is a generalized outlook, and you could have localized flooding from a individual thunderstorm, slow-moving thunderstorm, and I wanted to word that correctly to sort of be my out cue. And what was it? Could you say that one more time? I'm recording it, so I'll get your verbiage. So I just want to say it correctly. And it was like a, you know, hey, this outlook for my part of the country, you know, just shows minor flooding in some of my southern and western sections around Nashville itself. It doesn't have any flooding at all, but we all know that there still could be localized flooding. Could you repeat that statement for me just so I can say it correctly? And I have one other question. Could you once again give the descriptors of minor, moderate, and major? And I want to get that so I can say that correctly as well. Thank you.
Ed, can you help us with those?
Zach. Yeah, so the statement I said was please be advised that this outlook is on the time scale of weeks to months, not hours or days, and localized flooding may be caused by heavy, intense rainfall at any time. And I'll give you the definition again. Minor flooding means that minimal or no property damage, but roads may be inundated. Moderate flooding means some inundation of structures and roads near streams. And major flooding means extensive inundation of structures and roads. And then record flooding, as measured by the U.S. Geological Survey, is when flooding meets or exceeds historical levels.
Okay, thank you very much.
It looks like we have a question from Joan Gralla. Joan, are you able to unmute your line and ask your question? She may not be able to. Looking here in the chat window, she did ask if we could talk about the factors driving the outlook in the New York area. So I think that's for temperature and precipitation.
Yeah, I think for the Northeast, I'll pass it to Ron Horwood. He's our senior hydrometeorologist at Northeast River Forecast Center.
Thank you.
Yes, hi. This is Ron Horwood with the Northeast River Forecast Center. Right now, for the Metro New York City area, we're seeing water supply not being impacted too much. The snow has melted off of the Catskills, which supply the main drinking water for New York City. And as long as we ensure normal to above normal precipitation, as is forecast, we don't see any widespread drought or water supply issues going forward at this time.
Great, thank you. John, do you want to add for temperature and precipitation in that area?
Yes. For example, for the New York City region, as you can see on the map that's on display now, is we're continuing to favor above normal temperatures in the greater New York City area. And with the precipitation map, we also are favoring above normal precipitation. As far as the precipitation goes, the primary factors, driving the outlook this year. For some of the areas more towards the Great Lakes and Northern Ohio Valley, there is some residual potential La Nina influence, which tends to favor above normal precipitation in some of those areas. further to the east, some of the general basis for the outlook is just generally longer term precipitation trends that have been pretty strongly positive, as well as support from a number of our numerical weather forecasts and climate forecast models were had very good consistency. We're favoring above normal precipitation there. And for temperature, also similar factors were involved for the temperature outlook.
Great, thank you. And it looks like I have another question here from Nancy Garter, who she's put her question in the chat window. And her question is, can you again walk through the factors that you believe will contribute to worsening drought across the central and northern plains? Are there any El Nino or La Nina influences? And looking at the persistence, would climatology be in her favor? I believe Nancy is located in Oklahoma, so that may, I'm sorry, Omaha World Herald.
Yeah, I can take that, Lauren. So there's a number of factors. One, with respect to the developing drought conditions, we really had overwhelming support from a number of different factors, including to some degree residual La Nina factors, which went as we go into the later spring, do favor a slight tilt towards warmer temperatures across parts of the interior. But with such generally drier soil moisture conditions, and as I mentioned earlier, some of the numerical climate forecast guidance that we used was so consistent and so overwhelmingly and so consistent over time that we really have higher confidence in above normal temperatures across much of the country, and that includes the central plains region. And so with those factors overall, even though La Nina does play some role, it was really a combination of many different factors on the precipitation end. For the for the temperature end. For the precipitation end, again, La Nina does play a role with generally drier conditions from the northern Rockies down across the eastern and central high plains, for example, and into the southwest, including Texas. And so La Nina played probably more of a role there, but also, again, very consistent signatures in many of our forecast guidance products to help us with that, in addition to feedback from low soil moisture conditions across much of that area. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, John. I see, let's see here. I believe John Schwartz has a question from the New York Times. John, if I unmute your line, let's see if I can grab you. Oh, you have self-muted, that's okay. So John's question is, could one of our experts potentially talk about what the forecasts for drought mean for the upcoming wildfire season?
Sure, I can take a first stab at that. In general, as you can see, if you bring the drought monitor map up, you can see just how extreme the drought has been across many areas of the southern high plains and southwest. And for example, those dark shades there are, you know, extreme to exceptional drought, which cover a pretty large area from the southwest into the western parts of Texas. And so the drier conditions in general, obviously, are certainly a favorable factor for wildfire, as well as favored, pretty strongly favored prospects for above normal temperatures. And then when you work in also favored below normal precipitation across much of those areas, it would tend to favor probably an active wildfire season. There's other factors, of course, that impact that as far as fuels at the surface and other more varying factors, wind and humidities. But as a general climate perspective, there's likely to be an enhanced wildfire season across the southern high plains, extending with time over the course of the spring and summer into some of the higher latitudes moving forward in the southwest.
Great, John, thank you. And hopefully, John Schwartz, that it answers your question. At this time, I'm not seeing any other reporters with their hands raised. I'll just give one more reminder in terms of how to ask a question in case anyone would like to still do so. There is a hand icon next to your name on the attendee list. Feel free to use the raised hand function, and I will keep an eye out here for another moment to see if anyone else has a question they'd like to ask. I see. Let's see here. Looks like Seth has another question. Let me open Seth's line. Seth, you are self-muted. If you can open your line, there you go.
Let me try this again, maybe for Mary. Especially when you look at billion-dollar weather disasters of the past year, flooding often brings in you these billion-dollar weather disasters, and drought sometimes less so. So overall, for the U.S. as a whole, when you see this worsening drought that you were talking about, but few less flood risk, I'm trying to figure, can you just try to give me some sort of, do you think this is a net positive or is this a net negative in terms of damage for and costs for the United States?
Yeah, thanks, Seth. I guess what I would say is that, you know, even last year, we did have, as a part of our 2020 billion dollar disasters, so a drought-induced component from the western central drought and heat wave in the summer to fall period. We also had contributions to the disasters from the fires. It's not in our swim lane to be predicting the economic impact. So I would, you know, defer to others on that. And that's why we had the folks speak from the ag, you know, components and things like that. I would say that it's definitely something that we're watching and very concerned about. It does play into the billion dollar disasters. And I would like to see if our colleague from NCEI would like to, Karen Gleason, if she would like to make any comments about how we look at those billion dollar disasters. Karen?
This is Karen Gleason from the National Centers for Environmental Information. The billion dollar weather and climate disasters product that we maintain at NCEI indicated last year, certainly, that the Western wildfires, which were extensive across the Western US, not specifically localized, you know, were a major contribution to the cumulative disaster totals, money-wise. The drought as well as a separate entity was also rather extensive, but those, it takes, you know, periods of time for those to accumulate. Whereas if you look at flooding events, they're somewhat discrete. And because of that, you know, you can accumulate losses perhaps more quickly. So I'm not sure that I can actually state whether one is a net gain or a net loss, but on the time scales that they occur, the drought and the fires tend to accumulate over a longer period of time, whereas the flooding events tend to be more localized and discrete over a certain number of days, but can have large impacts, like I said, over a short period of time.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Looks like our next question comes from Mario Villafuerte. Mario, are you able to open your line?
Yes,
Mario, your line is open.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, the four states region of the Ark-La-Tex experiences large amounts of rain, and the map I saw has us on a really low level for drought. What can we experience here in northern Louisiana, East Texas, Oklahoma, and southern Arkansas in terms of flooding conditions for the spring?
Ed, can you direct us?
Yeah, let's there's a couple of folks. Let's first start with Jeff Grashel at the Lower Mississippi River Forecast Center.
Yeah, for those particular areas, what we're looking for right now, we've had some, you know, minor and even some moderate flooding already occurring this year from some of the heavier rainfall that we had in that Ark-La-Tex area. Currently right now, though, the projections that we're looking at for the next few weeks to months is minor to some isolated moderate flooding along those areas, specifically the tributaries going into the Red River, portions of the Ouachita River, and some of the smaller tributaries that go into the Ouachita themselves. And then further to the west over in the northwest part of, I'm sorry, the northeast part of Texas, some of those tributaries into the sulfur drainages and the cypress drainages also, we would have a chance of minor to maybe some isolated moderate flooding for the next weeks to coming months.
Is that due to an increase of precipitation over the four states region or
because everything flows for northern Louisiana from the north and the Red River. So are we expecting more rainfall for this area from the Gulf or flooding from other regions, let's say the Midwest
Yeah, for those areas, because, you know, specifically like the Washtenaw, I mean, even the tributaries going into the Red, specifically in the northern part of Louisiana or so, that's probably just going to be, you know, just the typical rainfall that we get for the spring, starting spring here in on Saturday. But that we typically do get that kind of minor to isolated moderate flooding across that area. We're kind of categorizing the risk as really a normal risk for your area this year. So any time we do get, you know, heavier rainfall that falls into those areas and stuff, we certainly can get some minor flooding to isolated moderate flooding. Now for the Red River itself, you know, the main stem of the Red River itself, we're really not looking for flooding along those locations. We're really talking about just the tributaries that actually go into it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And if I could just follow up on that, Lauren, real quick, from a more longer-term climate perspective, following up on the previous speaker, I certainly would agree that would be more higher frequency, if you will, with rainfall events that would cause a problem. From a longer-term climate perspective, we, at the current time, we are favoring below normal precipitation from the Texas area up across parts of the Western High Plains. So, again, that would be a factor that would potentially limit seasonal rainfall totals that may help. But again, that's just one factor. Just wanted to add that. That's all. Thank you.
There are limited, one more question. There are limited periods of drought here that have been forecasted by the local TV stations and a National Weather Service here in Shreveport. We fall on the edge of these. Will the increased amount of drought in the western areas spill over into our region?
Right now, we're not calling the drought outlook can be shown. Right now, the main areas of concern for expansion of the drought development would be more on the higher plains to your west,
okay,
across the Florida Peninsula. So right now, we're not really seeing that at the current time.
Thank you again.
Welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes through in the question box from Doyle Rice with USA Today, is asking, will NOAA ever produce a spring severe weather forecast? Is the science not quite there yet for such a forecast? Mary, is that one you might want to take?
I'll defer to Mary, but I can make some comments on that after she's finished.
Sure, John. Totally welcome that. Thanks for the question. This is Mary Erickson, Deputy Director of the National Weather Service. We continue to expand our subseasonal to seasonal prediction capabilities. And, you know, this is definitely the severe weather component is one of those things that we'll be thinking about. The predictability, there are some things that are uncertain, particularly with precipitation predictability. So maybe John wants to comment on that. It's one of the challenges.
Yeah, definitely, Mary. That's certainly one of the definite factors in that. I will say that we internally within NOAA, there are groups that working with various partners from academia and other national labs on whether the prospects for skillful predictions or reliable predictions on the seasonal timescale for severe weather are possible. So I would characterize that as we're looking into it, as Mary said, and we're evaluating it for the science integrity of that. But we're not at the stage where we would be producing operational outlooks at that timescale for severe weather at the current time.
Thank you. Let's see here. Our next question is from Stacy Moore. Stacy, you have self-muted, so if you're able to unmute and open your line and let us know what outlet you're with.
Hi, yeah, thank you. Stacy Moore, I'm with High Desert Publishing. We're in the Mojave Desert in Southern California. And my question was if somebody can speak to the reasons behind the failed monsoon season we saw here in the Southwest, and weather conditions like drought, above normal temperatures are going to be more likely continuing into the future.
This is John Gottschalk from CBC. I can make some comments about the failed monsoon. As I'm sure you know, there's so many different factors that go into whether the monsoon will be a robust or fail in the case of this past 2020 year. We never really received or the strong monsoon ridge, if you will, across the Four Corners was never really very much established to the point where you would get that very good northward push of moisture. Now, I mean, that's obviously more of a basic understanding of it or obvious answer. It's the factors that related to that. We had more trough into the further to the north intersecting with that area and also reduced, moisture. But those reasons why those things occur on the time scales of months and seasons, you know, we're still in the process of attributing that for that particular event. So I don't have any solid answers for you on that. But we are looking into actually within CPC itself this year, some of the factors that led to that failed monsoon. As far as drought moving forward, really would favor having comments from Karen, perhaps at NCEI, if she's interested in taking up that question.
This is Karen at NCEI. What was the specific question?
I think she mentioned that she wanted to know how drought conditions may be being altered as we move forward in the future.
Long range. Yeah.
Understood, yes. So my understanding is that we do anticipate in parts of the West for droughts to occur more frequently and be more intense as time goes on. That's something that we're already starting to observe and that we anticipate seeing as we move forward into the future.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question is one that has come through in writing, so I will read it. It comes from Perry Eliadorani from KETK in Tyler, Texas, who's asking, looking at your predictions, we are expecting drought to either persist or develop in eastern Texas, but also we're expecting minor flooding risk for your chart. Where is that flood risk coming from and how does that coincide with the drought risk either in the same location or nearby?
Yeah, let's start with perhaps the drivers behind the flood risk. Greg Waller from West Gulf RFC.
Thank you, Ed. The easiest way to explain it is you are right on the gradient. Portions of West Texas and South Texas, the La Nina took hold, lower than normal precipitation and drought conditions. However, in East Texas, the way the rainfall patterns have set up, the rivers across East Texas going over into Jeff's area in Mississippi or in Louisiana, those areas have had enough rain to keep the soil saturated, fill up a lot of the lakes, and those lakes in that area are not designed with flood storage, their water supply. So as Ed mentioned before, you know, the short-term high-intensity rain events, you know, will likely produce the usual minor flooding on those East Texas rivers, specifically in my area, the Neches, Angelina, and the Sabine. So you're right on the area to where the lack of rainfall is strengthening the drought, but you've had enough rainfall to keep things saturated. And as we know in this area, spring convective thunderstorms produce locally heavy rain that could get the rivers responding. So it is difficult to explain increasing drought, yet there is a flood risk. But that portion of East Texas is right on the gradient and is in the bullseye for both weather threats or climate threats.
Thank you so much. Let's see here. I see one more hand raised from Tom Frank with E&E News. Tom, if you're able to unmute your line, you should be able to ask your question.
Hi, question probably for Karen about the $1 billion disaster report that comes out every year. I noticed last year that all of the wildfires were counted as a single event. FEMA would count it as probably 20 or 30 events. Why do you count them all as one event? And is there any thought about counting them as separate events and dividing them up? Because they all have, you know, different locations. Some are in Colorado, some are in, they're all over the place and they have different starting and ends.
This is Karen Gleason at NCEI. That's a very good question. I understand that there are concerns because both for drought and wildfires, they cover, you know, quite, they can cover extensive areas. Adam Smith, my colleague, is the person, the individual who actually assembles these, and I believe there are reasons. I don't know what they are, but there are reasons for categorizing them and lumping them together as if they were one event. But I understand that it can be either confusing or, you know, you might want to break them into sort of distinct or discrete events if possible, but sometimes it's hard to do so if there are connections between them. So it's the way it's been done since the product has been, you know, in existence. I have to defer to my colleague, Adam Smith, who unfortunately isn't on this call, as to the reasons behind, you know, making sure that these events are lumped together as one event rather than several separate events.
Thanks, Karen. Jasmine, it looks like that appears to be our last reporter question for today. With that, I will turn it back over to you to conclude today's briefing.
Thanks, Lauren. That will conclude our media briefing for today. And I want to thank all of our participants who dialed in from our partner agencies at USGS, USDA, and across NOAA and the National Water Center, National Centers for Environmental Information, Climate Prediction Center, and the Regional River Forecast Centers. If there are any additional questions today, please do not hesitate to reach out to me. Again, my email address is jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov. That's jasmine.blackwell@noaa.gov. And I can also be reached by phone at 202-841-9184. If you don't already have the news release with the outlook and flood risk maps, they are all available on NOAA.gov and also linked in the chat box to your right. The audio and video from this call will also be available online and linked in our press release this afternoon. Thank you all and have a wonderful day.